if you're like me, what does God promise Solomon when he asked for wisdom in his dream? He says, hey, you didn't ask for all this other stuff, long life, riches, but I'm going to give you those as well. And so I took that for the longest time and I overlaid it of like, okay, Solomon's excused from doing all these things. Well, that's how we like to look at it. But at the end of the day, God's calling Solomon and giving these things to Solomon for whose glory? God's. And so what we're about to read, and I'm going to skip through 5 and 6. What happens is in 5, there's a guy named Hiram. He's king of Tyre, and he had a great relationship with David. And Solomon goes over and says, hey, Hiram, nobody has the skills of the woodworking that you do, so will you send a bunch of laborers over and I'll feed them. That's Hiram's response. Will you feed them? And they do some exchanging and some trading, and I want this to be the best of the best for God's house. And we're thinking, woo, right? Get excited about that. And so what he does, Hiram and Solomon agree, and they start this whole project. Get to chapter 7 when they do. During this, we're going to kind of skip over it, but during this, it also talks about Solomon's workforce. And what I want us to see in that is he had a draft for his workforce. Forced laborers is what it says. Should that be raising any flags? Man, this could get so deep into modern day cultural stuff. I can't believe in a God that backs slavery. Has anybody ever heard? Okay. This is gonna. Oh man. There's so much, and I only have 1 week to do this, so I'm not sure I want to go down this rabbit hole. There's a theme biblically that's called the Day of the Lord. The Bible Project does an incredible layout of this theme. A lot of it has to do with Solomon. But in it, you see that God raises kings and tears kings down, raises kingdoms, tears kingdoms down. That's in Scripture, right? And what these biblical authors point to as the Day of the Lord are these kingdoms that are raised and then torn down by God. And you have this whole section of the prophets that are people who aren't appointed by Israel as prophets, but later come down and are saying, hey, we're doing things wrong. Trying to wake the people up. We're doing things wrong. And throughout this whole section, you have just this muddled, and Solomon's like the bridge of God never wanted nor intended for Israel to turn into the new Babylon. He's called them to live differently. Matter of fact, there wasn't even supposed to be a king. Who are they supposed to look for to their king? God. But they pushed and they pushed and God answered, and so he gives them kings. And then they start seeing this kingdom. And then you see Solomon is like the pinnacle of what us on earth would say, that would be good living, right? The precious metals are as common as rock. And he's got 500 gold shields made out of gold. If you do the math, he's getting, it was, surprise, surprise, 666 talents of gold a year was what he was getting. It's a weird number, 58 to 75 pounds of gold per talent. A year. That's what he's importing. So These people are wealthy and rich, and Solomon's known for his zoo and the peacocks. And you see this pinnacle of what we, sitting down here, if we were living in that society, we'd be thinking, we got it pretty good, right? There's no scarcity. It's gold and riches, and everything's being taken care of. And what God was saying from the very beginning is, that's wrong. That's not what we're here to do. But when these kings got built up, and David has this moment with his son where he's on his deathbed and he says, follow God, follow his commandments, and don't fall away. God's promise to Solomon is if you do these things, you will have descendants on the throne forever. And then we see what happened here in a few chapters. Everything's just about to blow up. So we know it goes wrong somewhere. But it starts early. And what I want to get to, chapter 6, Solomon builds the temple in the 418th year after the Israelites came out of Egypt. And so what God is trying to pull them away from is this kingdom, this mindset that enslaved people. And I'm not talking about sojourners, right? Because Israel was sojourners in Egypt until Pharaoh died. The new Pharaoh comes, and then it turns into some oppression, right? And so if we really want to go down the rabbit hole, God spent a lot of time talking about how they are supposed to live differently. And so in our heads, when we're thinking, oh, he's doing this for God's temple, fantastic. But then you're still kind of wrestling with it, right? And then we get to chapter 7. And chapter 6 is going to explain all these dimensions of the temple. And I think they do this incredibly intentionally. I don't have time to compare, but I hope y'all go back and read chapter 6. Because we have God's temple and then chapter 7. How does anybody know how long it took Solomon to build the temple? I bet you do. 7 years. No, what takes 13 years is about to blow your mind. 7 years for Solomon's temple, or for God's temple. Chapter 7, it took Solomon 13 years, I love this word, however, to complete the construction of his palace. Ooh. You're going to spend 7 years on the house of the Lord, and then you're going to spend 13 years on your own place, using the same hired hands, using the same enslaved people. And now hopefully alarm bells are going off in our head. When it was for God's house, we're thinking, okay. Now it's for his own house. And not only his own house, but a monstrosity that semi-quasi dwarfs. I'm not saying that the temple is small, but semi-quasi dwarfs God's house. So what is he taking all this wisdom and doing? The wrong thing. He's taking everything encompassed that he was given by God, that he asked and received from God. An incredible businessman, right? Trade routes, these kingdoms are now united. David united them. And what he's done is he's turned it into a business. And he's got trade going. He's got gold coming in. He's got horses coming in. 1,400 chariots. He's got amassed this great amount of wealth. He's amassed exotic animals. He's amassed everything you could think for. And whose house is he putting it in? He's got 500 gold shields hanging up in his palace. For why? Not practical, useful, but great decoration, probably a great conversation piece for foreign dignitaries. God commands him not to go into relations with foreign women. What does he use his wisdom to do? Get into these relations so that he has agreements with these people. When he marries Pharaoh's daughter, Pharaoh comes and wipes out a whole city, and that's his gift to Solomon. So now he's not only got enslaved people, but Pharaoh, the people that they just escaped from, he's in bed with them, getting a dirty city as a gift for the bride's, from the bride's father. Right.
I mean, look at our country, what it was like 3 or 4 generations ago. Our country is drastically different. And have you moved away from the founding principles and ideology of what they're doing? And a lot of what he's doing is he's trying to fit into what's around him. Egypt, you know, Syria, you know, the Philistines and all those people around them that are doing similar things. And David, as we talked about and read about, wasn't always as aligned to God as he was, should have been as he in his rule. And so I think you're seeing this divergence of, which on the surface looks like prosperity, everything's going great, you're being recognized by Egypt, which I'm assuming was the power in that region at the time. You know, like, on the surface that looks pretty good, right? Well, is it? So, sorry, I just...
No, that's a great point. And that's a great thing to keep in mind, because I imagine we're going to get there. But when you start to have the prophets, it even says there's a whole generation that didn't know God, and that they went into their library, per se, and found the Torah and had never seen it before. It's like, what happened? The kings of old were writing scriptures and psalms and songs and deeply connected. And then skip, 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 and then you go, what do you mean they've never heard? Like, that's their history. That's their story. That's everything that they were wrapped up in the Torah, and they lost it for a whole generation, didn't even know God. And then you walk into the library and find these scrolls, and you're like, oh, I didn't even, what is this? So that's a great thing to keep in mind. And I it's a great point about 480 years being put there intentionally, because I think the biblical authors are mind-blowingly intentional about everything that they put in here. And I think it's incredibly prevalent in these chapters, because if you were in tune with the Torah, you'd probably be having alarm bells go off a lot sooner than right now. Because you're thinking, oh, God told us not to amass a bunch of gold and silver. God told us not to import horses from Egypt. How strangely specific is that? You think God knows what's going on all the time? So you think that's pretty intentional that this pops up several chapters later? And I think it's so, I don't know, I turn into a Bible geek really fast over this kind of stuff. But let's read it, actually, because I think this is important, and I'm a little nerdy on this kind of stuff, so apologies, but the king, Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. When you enter the land the Lord your God has given you and have taken possession of it and settled in it. Hasn't happened yet, right? But he's speaking it, so you know it's going to. And you say, let us set a king. Again, they didn't have a king for a long time. This is so accurate. Let us set a king over us like all the nations around us. Be sure to appoint over you a king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among your fellow Israelites. Do not place a foreigner over you. Among the fellow Israelites, check. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. If I was living back then, I'd be like, what? Why are we just talking about Egyptian horses? The Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. He must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll. This is what the king should do. Those were the don'ts. This is the should. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that the Levitical priest. It is to be with him, and he is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord as God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, and not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites and turn from the law to the right or the left. Then he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom Israel. Is that not the most mind-blowing scripture to read? Because what if this isn't in there, it changes a lot of things. It changes our outlook on Solomon. What does that turn Solomon into? An amazing king, a great businessman. He made his people prosper. He did all this stuff. What does it look like now? Exactly. So what we do in our human heads is if we didn't have this, we would have stepped back and we'd say, hey, this guy's got it all. Ask God for wisdom, check. Wealth, check. People respect him, check. People from all around the world respect him, check. People send, or talk about trade deals. I mean, this guy has everything going for him. And from 24-year-old Hunter sitting here, I'm saying, that looks pretty good. But let's take it back to what God says. And he's crushed everything he was commanded to do as king. So that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, and not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites. When you consider yourself better than someone, would you be willing to enslave them to do your work?
But those laws of Deuteronomy don't describe a king, or at least in worldly. That's serve people. The people serve the king. So it's very juxtaposed or contradictory to what we perceive as a monarch or a king or a person who is, at this time, we're generally thought of as a god or something like that. And all those things are very intentional because Pharaoh was supposed to be a god, right? Like God on earth. You know, those things are, God didn't want the Israelites facilitating with those types of influences because it will result in the next large chunk of Bible section. All the bad parts.
We would almost say it was inevitable. You've got a human ask for wisdom, and again, we are defining wisdom as knowing good from bad. Garden of Eden language. This won't kill you. You'll just be able to see like God. They take the fruit. Solomon asked for discernment. I believe at the time, well, I know at the time because of God's reaction, that was out of good place, good heart. Now he's got all this wisdom. He discerns good from bad. He knows things about everything. It says he knows things about the birds of the air and beasts of the field. I mean, God gave in abundance to Solomon in this wisdom.
Can I make a couple of random jumps?
Yes.
Or do you need
more? You can, but you go ahead.
I think it's fascinating that they're storing up, Solomon's storing up on earth, which is in contradiction to what was intended, and it becomes, it makes them a target to be conquered. Nobody in large society is interested in conquering Africa, because what's there to conquer? And so he's asking them to live on earth as they should be, where that's not their treasure. And they would have a long life in regards to that. But because they chose the path of what pleases the eye, now not only have they lost the perspective, but people have noticed them for the wrong reasons, which makes them the target to be conquered and ultimately back up as foreigners.
Yeah, I mean, this gets so backwards. It seems like so fast, but you see these little nuggets of Solomon starting to take and do this. And what I just wanted to read, because this is, I think, very, for me, easy to get into that headspace. I imagine for y'all, probably similar. It took Solomon 13 years, however, to complete the construction of his palace. He built the palace of the Forest of Lebanon, 100 cubits long, 50 wide, and 30 high, with four rows of cedar columns supporting supporting trimmed cedar beams. It was roofed with cedar above the beams that rested on the columns, 45 beams, 15 in a row. Its windows were placed. I'm going to skip through some of this. But it's just describing this monstrosity. And one thing that I find incredibly neat. Not neat, I'm sorry. Interesting. Is the depiction of Solomon's throne. I'm only getting like one verse at a time. I forgot my another bad thing about being a dad trying to get here on time. Is you leave your stuff behind. Solomon made a throne of ivory and overlaid it with the best gold. The first... That's not what... There. Then the king made a great throne and covered with ivory and overlaid it with fine gold. The throne had six steps, and its back had a rounded top. On both sides of the seat were armrests, with a lion standing beside each of them. 12 lions stood on the six steps, one at either end of each step. Nothing like it had ever been made for any other kingdom. All King Solomon's goblets were gold. All the household articles and in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were made pure gold. Nothing was made of silver, because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. It should bother us deeply. Nothing has been made like it for any kingdom. He just built God's house. And saying, hey, nothing like this has been done before. You have six huge lions on each side of you walking up six steps to a massive throne. Who sits on that throne? Solomon, sadly. He built this massive house, he built all these things, and he, cherry on top is this immense throne, covered in the finest gold, surrounded by six lions. I mean, imagine walking into that. I hope what you're doing right now is not saying, oh, that's Solomon. What a ditch, right? He missed the whole point. I hope what we're doing is thinking about us. I hope what we're doing right now is thinking about what we invest all we've got in. And I'm not even talking just monetarily. I'm talking your time. I'm talking the words that come out of your mouth. I'm talking about every aspect of your life should be pointed, directed, devoted to God. That's not saying that you should just go live in a tent on the side of the highway. I'm not trying to say that. But I'm saying, with how you see Solomon's house, how you see God's house is backwards. What we should be doing is putting God way up here, building us the small house. Because whether it's the words that are coming out of your mouth, are most of the words out of your mouth for you or for God? This isn't to take everything away from you. I'm not saying just be a beggar on the street, right? That's not what I'm saying here, and that's not the depiction given. The depiction given is that if this was flip-flopped, and he spends 13 years on God's house, and he's like, hey, right? He could live in a nice house. But what did he get completely wrong? Is he saw everything just like Kevin was talking about. He took all this worldly stuff that's going to put a huge, ginormous target on his back. And he said, hey, I kind of think that this is, I mean, who wouldn't, guys, read his description of, I think they had like 300 showers in that house. Who wouldn't want a 1,000-bedroom, 300-shower house with 1,000 maidens to clean it, right? Well, taxes anymore, but if you're the king, you get all the taxes. But it is pointing to a very evident thing that I think happens at some point in all of our lives. And that's a selfish switch flips. God provides, God follows through with something, God puts you in a fantastic position, and what do you do with it? You use it to give yourself one of these. I do it. I've done it. It's not just about money, it's about time, words. I used to tease my mom because she is incredibly schedule-driven, and she would get upset about some things. I'd say, hey, Mom, isn't it God's time? Right? And I'm not sure she loved that coming from her son. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. But it's true. It's God's time. You were put in charge of divvying up God's time, God's fill in the blank. Do we use that for Him? Are we good employees? Or do we go to work and we're like, we've got a really nice boss, let's take advantage of him? Because we do. A lot. We have this incredibly neat relationship with God, and that is God created the world so that He could have a relationship with us in this co-rule environment. So that we could subdue the land, we could rule over it, and we should do it in a manner that He would. We should do it as a reflection of Him, because we're taking care of His stuff. That's a beautiful picture. That is incredible. So what does that mean? All this stuff that we got going on, these beautiful mountains, all this stuff that God put in your charge, the resources, the time, the everything that He puts in your charge. If you're good at talking with people, if you're, whatever the case is, whatever talents you think you have, or anything you can, the breaths you take are all His. Are we good stewards of that? Or do we get these blessings passed on by God like Solomon got in his wisdom? And do we sit back and say, hey, I could make Hunter look really good right now. Because he did. Again, without a few verses in Scripture, Solomon would be a hero. He'd have some shortcomings, right? All the wives, different nations, and this kind of stuff, and letting his heart get drawn towards other gods. We can very prevalently say without those verses that was wrong. But then that's it. Think about it. It's mind-blowing to think about. The relationship and the trust instilled to us by God. Thank you, Monty. Nobody likes the helicopter manager, right? Not Monty, kind of. Just kidding. God doesn't do that. It's our turn to be responsible and respectful towards reflecting Him. Think about that. Again, if you have time, read these really three verses, 7 through 10. It's verses, chapters, four chapters, I guess. And look at it. Because there's some, I mean... You just see this twist. And to us on the outside, it looks great. What it's put in there for is to say, hey, that's not so good. Thank y'all for being here. We have a little more Solomon next week. And then, forgot what we had at the very end. Oh, the end of Solomon. So, Solomon for 2 more weeks. Happy